and welcome to Poop Problems with Heather DiCriscio and Debbie Constable. We talk about poop pretty much all day, every day. This podcast is about daily struggles, ongoing challenges, memorable poops, and expert advice. And we love interviewing guests. Poop Problems is for entertainment and informational purposes only and does not count as medical advice. Also, we try not to say bad words.
Please note, this episode is not suitable for work or children as we discuss sex during this episode.
Welcome to today's episode of Poop Problems Podcast. If you've ever wondered about the consistency of your poop or asked yourself, why is my poop sticky like peanut butter? Or why does my poop look different every day? Then you should definitely listen to this episode. We talked to Beth Rosen, a non-diet registered dietitian who specializes in digestive disorders. She tells us a lot about the consistency of poop, and we learned why we should be having a number 4 instead of a number 2. We also figured out that she probably knows one of our other guests who shared a really personal story. Small world, right?
Oh, hi there. It's Beth.
Oh, hi, Beth.
Heather and Debbie.
Hi.
Welcome to Poop Problems.
Yes.
Thank you. I identify with that.
Oh, good.
I'm super excited to have you this evening because I'm hoping that you're going to answer my years of wondering about poop consistency, like what makes it sticky. So I'm super excited. I feel like I want to just jump right in so that you can tell me what makes poop sticky.
Yeah. Ooh, that's a lot of pressure. That's
Well, as soon as I saw the word consistency, I said to my sister, I said, Debbie's going to love this because we're always talking about this ourselves, like just on a personal level, you know, about different, you know, poop consistencies and like especially whenever it takes like a long time to wipe.
Mm-hmm. Was that associated with something that I spoke to Lisa about? Is that why?
It was in the little bio, like the little thing that you wrote.
It said, it was? Okay.
Yeah, it's
it was really so long ago.
Yeah. Oh, it was kind of a while ago.
Yeah. It was like one of those things that like popped up, I think, on Facebook. I'm like, I'm in. Yes. And then I went to the calendar and like, I'm not in for a little while, but I'm in.
Right. She messaged us this morning and said, you have an interview. And I was like, what? I didn't even remember.
I did the same thing. I said, thanks for the reminder.
Right.
Oops. Yeah.
Well, you are a registered dietitian.
I'm a registered dietitian. I specialize in digestive disorders. Mm-hmm. I would say that I'm a low FODMAP diet expert. Mm-hmm. I've got lots of clients that run the spectrum from gastroparesis, where things just don't move, all the way to IBSD, where things move constantly, or even colitis, where things move all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, so we run the spectrum in my office.
Okay. I'm sure you're a big help to many people.
I'd like to think so. I mean, it certainly feels good to work in this niche of nutrition, where you can really see a difference when you change what you're eating. Regardless, a lot of people go to dietitians because they want to lose weight, and that's not what I do. So I'm glad that when people come to me, they start to feel better in their bodies and they make peace with how they feel and with food. And so it's just a nice space to be in.
Right. I saw that. Yes. Particularly you wrote non-diet.
Yeah. I practice from a weight inclusive approach, meaning that everybody can strive to feel better, to strive for health, to strive for wellness in the size they are right now, and body size doesn't equal health. So sometimes you're in a bigger body and you're healthy, and sometimes you're in a smaller body and you're not healthy, and vice versa. So we sort of take the body part out of it and just deal with the symptoms and, you know, malnourishment or mm-hmm. nutrient deficiencies, mm-hmm. and we heal from within.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a great approach, and I think you're right. We were actually talking about this with another dietitian that, you know, I think most people, when they talk about their diet, they're mostly concerned with, you know, just being smaller, mm-hmm. losing weight, and don't really focus on how they feel or what exactly they're putting into their body, just as long as they're losing weight.
Right. Right. And a lot of times that exacerbates the issues that I see in digestive disorders when you're restricting, or if you go on some, some crazy diet, that can cause constipation. They don't realize that that's the cause of it.
Right.
The lack of making fruits and vegetables the villain, as in the keto diet,
Right. Right. Yeah. I totally get it. Yeah. That's what you, I think in the little blurb you wrote, the meaning behind poop consistency, that's what we were excited about. And also about your personal stories and the Instagram account you were thinking of.
I wrote that down. I gave away all my Shark Tank ideas.
Well, we're interested in all of them.
Although we don't have any money to offer you if they're great ideas. So
yeah.
Yeah. So if you want to tell us a little bit about what you meant about people with their consistencies, or you can start wherever you want.
I guess, when it comes to pooping, there's a range of consistencies, and they start from they're really measured on the Bristol stool chart, which is
I didn't know there was a such thing.
Yeah, there's a chart where you can compare your poop to the poop in the Bristol stool chart. And it goes from type 1 to type 7.
Oh, Debbie, did you know that?
I did not.
Okay. So I get to enlighten you on poop consistency.
Yeah.
So
this is it. This is my episode. I'm hanging on your every word.
This is what you're interested in.
Finally, the answer to the sticky poop.
Okay, so we're going to get nice and gross because as a GI dietitian, I talk about poop constantly and I have no filter on it. And just got back from a conference and I sat at a table with 12 other GI dietitians while we were having dinner. And the people around us must have been completely disgusted by our conversations, but it doesn't faze us.
No,
mine and Heather's coworkers were the same way.
Yes,
so.
People would be what is wrong with you guys? And we're just eating lunch. And so believe me, you're not going to gross us out.
Wonderful. Okay. So the reason why we typically use the Bristol stool chart is for diagnosis purposes, right? So especially when it comes to irritable bowel syndrome, it's usually subtyped. There are four subtypes. There's irritable bowel syndrome with predominant diarrhea, with predominant constipation, with mixed bowel habits, and unspecified. Those are the four.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on what you have is your majority of your poop consistency based on the Bristol stool chart, that determines where you fall into, where your subtype is. If you're, so that's how it works. So we go from type 1 to type 7, type 1 being the constipation end of the spectrum and type 7 being the diarrhea end of the spectrum.
Okay.
Type 1 are your pebbles, your little pebbly ones. They're separate. They're hard lumps. They're hard to pass. It's really a sign of constipation that you have those, right? You can't really get anything out. Those are the ones where you don't need to wipe. They just sort of come out and that's it.
Right.
And type 2 is the pebbles, but sort of connected to each other, like connected lumps.
Okay.
Almost that, I'm trying to think of what it's called, but it's that string of candy with all the runts on it.
Nerds rope.
Yes. That's what it looks like.
That's hilarious.
So nerd rope poop is number 2. So that's your constipation sort of section of the Bristol stool chart. And number 3 out of the types is when you're starting to get into normal poop. So this is where you still have, it's still bumpy, the nerd's rope, but it's a little bit more like a corn on the cob. So they're more worn together. It's one solid mass.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be type 3. Type 4 is the ultimate poop, right? It's the ideal poop is smooth like a sausage. It's easy to pass. And that's the sign of a healthy poop.
Yeah. Okay. Right? Number four. Okay. Number four. Okay.
Yeah. Number four is the goal. If you're at three, that's not terrible. You know, it's still formed, but it's still, you know, it's bumpy, where number four is one of those like beautiful poops. and then you go into the other side of the spectrum, which is like the diarrhea side of the spectrum.
Five, six, and seven.
So five would be like they're separate pieces, but they're fluffy. They've got clear edges to them. So different than the kind. They're more like fluffy little pieces.
Mm-hmm.
Type six would have more of a mushy consistency with like ragged, jagged edges on them.
Mm-hmm.
And almost sort of like melting into each other.
Okay.
Right. And seven is liquid consistency with no solid pieces. That's like your, you know, bowel prep for a colonoscopy.
Okay.
And those, depending on where you fall in the five, six, and seven, those are signs of mild to severe diarrhea.
Okay.
Right. So that's your Bristol stool chart 1 to 7. So if you end up having 25% or more in either the 1 and 2 or the 5, 6, and 7, that would make you, and less than 25% of the other ones, that would make you likely to have that, subtype.
Okay.
But if you have 25% of one and 25% of other, that would most likely mean that you fall into the mixed bowel habits.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have 25% of any of them, then you end up in the unspecified category.
Okay. So what, well, before we move on to the question about, I was going to say, like, well, what foods do you usually promote, or is everybody just kind of like, it just depends. Basically, you start with the appearance and consistency, and then you kind of go from there.
I think it depends on what the diagnosis is. So if we're talking about somebody gets diagnosed with irritable bowel syndrome, typically I will go towards the low FODMAP diet. So if you're not familiar with it, the low FODMAP diet is, that's an acronym, FODMAP, that stands for fermentable oligosaccharides, disaccharides, monosaccharides, and polyols, which is basically a fancy way of saying fermentable carbohydrates.
Okay.
So what happens is there's two different kinds. One kind of the carbohydrates from these kinds of carbohydrates go into the gut, and they're fibrous, and the microbes in our gut will feed off of them and produce gas, and then that gives us gas.
Mm-hmm.
The other kind will be not easily digestible, and where it should be digested in the small intestine will make its way into the large intestine. It will be a larger molecule than belongs in there. And, you know, back to science, like biology, there'll be some water osmosis or diffusion. I could never remember the two of those.
I definitely
got points off on that one. But water gets drawn into the gut, and that's what causes bloat. So for regular people who eat these foods, they don't necessarily feel the effect. Maybe they have a little gas, but don't necessarily feel the true effects of what can happen when somebody who has IBS has these foods. The gas and the bloat trigger pain. It's a feeling of bloat that's like you're about to burst. You need to pop yourself with a pin.
Mm-hmm.
It could trigger hypersensitivity in the gut, where your bowels are moving very quickly and you have an urgency to go.
Mm-hmm.
It could cause diarrhea and slow constipation and slow everything down. So for somebody with irritable bowel syndrome, we want to avoid those fermentable carbohydrates for a short time to determine which ones are really the cause, if any.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not intuitive. Like, you can't just look at a food and say, yeah, you have fermentable carbohydrates in you and you don't. It's really learning a list of foods that are specific to the low FODMAP diet.
Okay.
And that's why in the research, it's been noted by the researchers that the best way to implement the diet is via a GI dietitian.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is very nuanced. It's detailed. It's hard. You know, it's not like the low FODMAP diet has been co-opted by diet culture like the gluten-free diet has. And there's shelves worth of product out there for these people yet. You know, hopefully one day that'll happen, where there's low FODMAP products in the supermarkets and it's easy to do. But for right now, there aren't a lot of them.
Right. That would be nice. It's like, it seems like the only thing that kind of caught on so far in the grocery stores that weren't there maybe 10, plus years ago is like gluten-free.
Gluten.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you now I'm seeing things labeled keto-friendly, paleo. You know, so a lot of Weight Watchers has their own line of food. So a lot of the diet, a lot of the diets, the fad diets, have found their way into consumer goods because.
Oh, true. Yeah, I'm at South Beach. Yeah,
yeah, because items are like the companies will produce these things because there's a consumer want for them. But 15% of the U.S. population has IBS.
I'm surprised it's not higher.
Well, that's diagnosed. So it might be higher, right? So it might be misdiagnosed. It might be diagnosed as something else. So, you know, we're not so sure about that. But so when it comes to people coming into my office, my clients coming in and talking to me about their stool, one of the things that happens when you go on the elimination phase, there's three phases to the diet of the elimination phase. We go through the process of removing those fermentable carbohydrates to see if they make a difference. And believe it or not, whether or not you have diarrhea or constipation, the low FODMAP diet will work to bring you to the, you know, that ideal number four poop.
Okay. I didn't, I wouldn't have guessed that. I thought it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought you would want, like, maybe if you had constipation, you would want like a higher, like fermentable type thing. Like, I'm assuming like, I don't know, like sauerkraut and like, what are some of the foods?
So the things that we typically remove, and this isn't an exhaustive list, but there are lists out there, especially if you're working with a dietitian. But some off the top are things like wheat, onion, garlic, fluid milk, watermelon, pitted fruits, dried fruits, cauliflower. So some things like that, but there are ones that you wouldn't think of, like apples, asparagus, some nuts like pistachios.
Really?
Cashews. So there are some out there that are, you know, higher, have more fermentability than others. And so
some of the things you mentioned, like onions, I could guess, but I wouldn't have guessed like cashews.
Yeah. And then the issue is that now that prebiotics and probiotics are becoming buzzwords in the food industry and in health industries, a lot of companies are adding prebiotics to their foods. Mm-hmm. But a lot of these prebiotic fibers that are being added are high FODMAP. So like, for instance, there's a yogurt company, I won't mention it, that a lot of people eat, and they added inulin as a sweetener or to boost the fiber in their yogurt. But inulin is a high FODMAP ingredient, and that would cause fermentation in people who could normally have that yogurt.
I remember one time I did have maybe the yogurt you're talking about. It might have been a different kind, similar, but... Oh my God, I had one little yogurt and I never had so much gas in my entire life. It lasted for like 18 hours. I'm not even kidding. And I'm like, what am I supposed to do with myself? Like, I had this little yogurt that was like six ounces and I just was miserable.
Yeah, you're a gas machine. You fermented away.
I was a gas machine. And I never touched it again.
And you know, and that's the issue with people who have irritable bowel syndrome is that they blame everything on food because you think you eat something, then you don't feel well. It's the food's fault. But a lot of times it's the function of the gut. So sometimes it doesn't matter what you eat, it's that you eat. But for a lot of people, once we remove those highly fermentable foods for a short time, the symptoms go away. And then we systematically go to the next phase and we systematically add those foods back one by one, because most likely not all of those foods are triggers. People might have one or two triggers, and then they can stay away from those specific foods and feel better.
Yeah. And again, we were talking to, I think the last gut expert we talked to, we were surprised of all of the good foods, you know, that
people are sensitive to.
Oh yeah, for sure. There's lots of them.
Yeah, like fruits and vegetables. You think, oh, I'm eating fruits and vegetables and whole foods.
And they're the culprit, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, some of them are. You know, there's still plenty of fruits and vegetables. The good thing about the low FODMAP diet is it doesn't restrict or remove one specific food group. There's foods within each group that are restricted, but otherwise there's enough of those foods to go around. So, you know, unfortunately, like a food like cauliflower and like celery juice are now popular as fad foods, but those are both highly fermentable. So if you're like me and you have to avoid gluten and you go to a restaurant and their new gluten-free pizza is cauliflower, I can't have that either.
You know?
Because I have irritable bowel syndrome as well. So, you know, I'm out of luck if there's only, you know, wheat pizza around.
Right. Right. Well, back to the consistency. And Debbie, you and I complain a lot from going to about like a 1 to a 5
yes.
or 1 to a 6. And it seems like everyone, like, you know, we do occasionally have a 4.
4, but it's
yeah.
rare.
Yeah. It's like
right.
it's either like,
it's like the holy grail of.
We're texting each other. Oh, well, today. Well, I'll just say,
I had
like,
the million,
I'll just keep
the million
it, yeah.
wipe, you know?
Yeah. Where it's like, I just want to get on with my day, but I spent 30 minutes in the bathroom
right,
wiping.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, or the opposite. Like, I feel so sick. I only went like a few pebbles.
Yeah. Pellets.
Yeah.
Yeah. An insufficient evacuation.
Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, that could be related to your diet. It could also be related, you know, people who don't have irritable bowel syndrome can also experience constipation or diarrhea. There is a number of reasons why people have, you know, diarrhea or constipation, but it could be a lack of intake of water.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a lack of intake of fiber or both. It could be fiber without the water. Mm-hmm. It could be stress.
Yeah.
You know, it could be a lack of movement.
I'm going to go with that one.
Yeah.
You know, if you're not moving your body regularly, then your gut muscles don't move either. So moving your body can help you feel a little better as well.
Right.
Yeah. Which is, you know, sometimes a nice thing to just go for a walk and then have to poop afterwards.
Yes. We've actually talked to somebody, a dietitian that had to go on her walk.
Run. It was more of a run, I think.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. She had to use her her dog bags.
The extra dog bag, yes.
Yeah,
extra dog for bags. Containment of her own.
Yeah.
Hopefully a number 4.
Yeah.
I think I met that dietitian.
Oh really?
That story sounds familiar.
That's hilarious. She's well known.
I think so. Yeah.
So do you said you might have like some personal funny or just relatable IBS stories yourself and kind of like your journey.
Yeah. Like, so I was diagnosed back in February of 2010. Well, I wasn't diagnosed yet. I had my first experience with IBS symptoms,
that's okay.
back in February of 2010 when I developed C. diff.
Oh.
I got C. diff because my daughter was in the hospital with pneumonia and I stayed with her. So I got the C. diff.
Really?
And she got the IV antibiotics and I'm the one who got sick.
Jeez.
It was a big roller coaster after that. I mean, we're talking almost 10 years.
Oh,
and
my
it's not,
God.
Yeah, and it's not until... So I've had 2 bouts of C. diff. I've had 2 bouts of SIBO, which is small intestinal bacterial overgrowth.
Yeah.
And I've had IBSD through all of that.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, so I've had a lot of poop stories to tell. But I've tried, you know... I've found relief from certain things more than other things, but never feeling, you know, fully better. You know, my doctor always says to me that I live at a 7 when I could be living at a 3, and I don't tell him until it's a 9, and I need to tell him when it's a 3. You know? But you know, after going through childbirth, you know, IBS pain isn't as bad, but there's actually research that showed. I was at a conference last week. I was at the FENCE conference, which is the food and nutrition conference and expo. It's like the Super Bowl for dietitians.
That sounds fun.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. There's like 12,000 dietitians. One of the presenters who was presenting on IBS had said that there was a study done that questioned people with IBS with diabetes, with end-stage renal disease, with a number of things on their quality of life.
Uh-huh.
And I don't have the data in front of me, but what they found out was people with IBS have recorded that they have a lower quality of life than someone with end-stage wow. renal disease.
I believe it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because there's no trust that you're going to be able to leave the house.
Yep.
You know, any of those things. So it does really change your life. So for me, I found over those 10 years, there were times when it was really difficult to deal with the pain, the discomfort, the urgency in the morning. You know, the feeling of clothing on my body was uncomfortable. Mm. So I went through a long journey of it. I also put myself through the low FODMAP diet, which was helpful, but didn't take every single thing away. So there are some alternative therapies I use, some other things. And then recently, this summer, after I went to a conference in May, I called my GI doctor and said, okay, I want to try this new drug.
Mm-hmm.
And he knows already that I sort of advocate for myself.
Right.
And he does his own research, but, you know, I'll call him and say, we need to talk about the biofilms. And he's like, stop reading. So I asked for this drug and he put me on it. And for the first time in 10 years, I had a number 4 poop.
Oh.
Like I had a solid, beautiful, like snake in the toilet poop. And this is, I literally wanted to take a photo and start a new Instagram
yes!
account of like the, right? Like of the prettiest poops ever made. And mine was first.
Yeah. Well, we would definitely visit your site.
Yes.
Would you
we
know?
Would probably yeah. like contribute as well.
Yeah. I was going to say it probably contributes.
Yes. Like, but not like, it doesn't just like, I don't want to exclude anyone's poop. So while mine might've been very pretty, there's a kind of poop called steatorrhea, which is where there's oil and fats in the poop when you have poor digestion of fats. And that almost looks like green oil in the toilet. And people like to take pictures of that and share it with me when they come to my office. So
okay. We
might include some of the really gross ones.
Yeah, just to learn, like, this is what you don't want.
Yeah.
Right. This is fat malabsorption. Let's discuss.
Yeah. What does your poop say? Like,
yeah.
Right. Exactly. And that's what the Bristol stool chart helps you figure out. What is your poop trying to tell
yes,
you?
Yes. Yes.
You know? Like if her poop is blue, you probably had something with blue food coloring in it.
Well, you know, it's funny because I can tell you what my dog's poop tells me, but I can't really tell you what my own does. I mean, I know, but you know, like it was only a matter of I think less than a week that I knew my dog was intolerant to chicken. You know, I couldn't even tell you what I'm intolerant to. Like I have no idea, you know.
Yeah, my dog's poop tells me she eats tissues.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's sort of gross, but you know,
it happens.
I guess it wipes as it comes
out.
I told you I was gross.
You fit right in.
Yeah, you fit right in. Listen to some of our other episodes that we've created. We've given some of our own accounts, and they're not gross. And my boyfriend is not at all like me. I have to literally, like, I'm in the upstairs bedroom doing the podcast because he can't really listen or talk about any of this.
That's very funny. My husband also has gut health issues, so the two of us talk about poop all the time.
See, that's what my sister said. Are you and him even compatible? And I said, well, I don't know.
Yeah, like, well, yeah. Eric and I talk about it pretty much every day.
Yeah, well, see, I think that's a good thing. I think
you should,
you know, I mean, my boyfriend has come a long way, but it's still nowhere.
There's still a lot of resistance with him.
Oh, definitely.
You know, I mean, he can't even be in the same room as you. At least mine is in the kitchen right now.
Right, yeah. If he overhears anything like this, then it's like, I gotta go. I gotta get out of here.
Yeah. Newsflash, women poop.
Yeah, right. It doesn't evaporate.
And it's sometimes it's not a 4.
Most times it's not a 4.
Exactly.
And it's so funny that this chart exists, but yet, you know, like, why didn't we ever say, like, I have to do a number 4 instead of a number 2? Like,
that's,
you know,
well, I feel like
I'm going to do a number 2. Well, but that's not what we want. We want a number 4.
Exactly. I feel like from now on, when you and I discuss it, Debbie, it's going to definitely be on the
Yes.
On the stool scale.
Yeah, it'll be like an award, you know, who gets the most fours in a week.
Yeah. Yeah. So on my website, I have this free downloadable template that's called Tell Your IBS Story. And anyone who goes to a doctor can really use it. But in there is where you can keep track of, you know, what your stool consistency looks like, so that when you do go to the doctor, you can share with them what, you know, how you're feeling and what your bowel habits are, so that they can help to diagnose you sooner should you have a digestive disorder where, you know, you could, your poop's telling you something.
Yeah, I was just going to bring that up. And you also have some online courses, free online courses?
I do. I have a free video training on the three strategies for success with the low FODMAP diet. For people with IBS or digestive disorders, because the diet can be used if you have irritable bowel syndrome, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. It's even shown to be beneficial in people with colitis. Mm. So a lot of gut health issues are helped with it. And then there are some people who are diagnosed with certain things that may be IBS, so it may help them as well. Mm-hmm. So that's a free training. But then I do have an online course for people who maybe don't have a GI dietitian near them and want to learn all about the low FODMAP diet and really use it for themselves, and then use some of those alternative therapies that I use with my clients in conjunction with the diet to really help people who have have diarrhea or constipation or both. Mm-hmm. So that's on there too. And I think all of the links will go into the show notes that you have, but my website is www.goodnessgraciousliving.com, and the free ones are under where it says free resources at the top, and the course is underneath services. So those are two places where you can find the things. But I have a coupon for your listeners. If they put in poop as the code, I'll give them 25% off the course.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Yeah, you pretty much covered everything I was going to ask you about. So yeah, that was informative, and I'm going to check it out myself.
I am too, yes, actually. I want to take the training.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. Oh, please do. And then if you have any questions, you can contact me either through my website, because I have a place where you can contact me, or I'm on social media. So you can DM me on Instagram. I'm at Goodness Gracious Living, or you can message me or tweet at me on Twitter. I'm at GG Living there. So I run back and forth all day.
Oh, good, good. I'll be following you soon then.
Great. Follow you back.
Thank you. Well, I think that about covers everything I wanted to talk about. Debbie, do you have any?
No, I think I feel so much better now. I understand what's going on with my stickiness, and we're gonna have to let you know, our coworker in on this as well.
Yes, we have a coworker, Wayne, who constantly complains about sticky bowel movements. Yes. We keep using that word because that's what he
how
says.
He describes
that's
it.
That's how
is
he describes
sticky?
It. So we yeah. That's what we've like adopted that term. But I think what he's saying is he's actually having a lot of number fives and sixes.
It sounds
so.
Like it.
He might have to go on like the low
low FODMAP diet. That, yeah. Yeah.
So, all right. Well, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure.
Come back
this
again.
This was fun.
Yes. Yes. Of yes. Course. I was going to say, if you ever want to come back, if anything else you want to promote or talk about, or new information or funny stories.
Yeah, I would love to.
Okay. Well, it was great speaking with you, Beth.
You too.
Okay. Have a good night.
Have a good
Thanks,
night.
Thanks. You too.
Okay.
Okay. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Well, how did she manage to escape telling us the funny story?
I know. Maybe she got, she's not shy.
No, but I didn't want to go back and say okay, come on, tell us the story.
Right, right. I knew she had some stories, but.
Yeah. But speaking of Bobby's today.
Oh my God. That will actually go good. We should book that voicemail to this
I know, because of it being like the pebbles, and yes. She was happy with that. And
yeah, then she was clearly
the random, like,
she was clearly having some number ones. Well, she texted me earlier, and she's like, "Hey, I want to tell you something." She's like, "But I'm gonna call you and leave you a voice message, because it's easier to talk about than it is to text." Yeah. And I'm thinking, is it something serious? Like, is she like something with her health, you know, something going bad? And then I was like, well, I'm home today. Just call me or I'll answer. You know, you don't have to leave a voicemail. But then I did get busy, which I'm so glad I did, because I have it recorded. And my God, that's what I said to her. I'm like, this is the best. I get to listen to it. And I said, hey, can we use this voicemail on the podcast? She said, yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
And she's like, how did it happen? And then she's like, it's like a little log.
And she's like, I tried to pick it up.
And it just smushed into.
I was like, this is perfect. Thank you.
I know. Like, the description was the best. Like, I was like, she's like,
go ahead.
No, she's like, I'm picturing a pebble. You know, and she's like, it's like a little log.
I was like bent over laughing. Like, I like couldn't breathe when I like in the middle of it. Well, the funniest part was Luke was sitting there and I had no idea what she was going to tell me. You know what I mean? She didn't give me any indication what the voicemail was. And I start laughing and he gets up halfway through. He's like, I can hear some of it. I gotta go. Like, and he literally walked out, and I'm just like doubled over, like laughing.
So my next thing I would like for your sister to find us is I want some guests to talk about, like, we've tried to do like the most memorable, but I want the most embarrassing poop.
Yes.
Like, the most embarrassing. And of course, yes, before you ask, I have one of those.
Yes!
But I would like to hear, I would like some other people, I would hear, like, you know, to hear theirs first. And yes, then I will disclose mine. Like, you're not getting it right out of the gate.
Right, okay. Fair enough.
So that's my that's what I would like to have, you know. And I really don't, if we find people for this, I really would not want to have like an expert. I really just want like straight humor for this that episode.
Okay. Well, maybe my friend Travis, did he respond?
I saw that.
So I'm gonna badger him a little bit.
Yeah. And see if he has like a memorable, or not memorable, but like embarrassing, like the most embarrassing, you know.
Right. Right. Well, I think I'm sure he does, because he's pretty funny. Okay. So I'm going to see if he will be interested in that.
All right.
Which, I, knowing him, he has to have an embarrassing story.
I think everyone does. It's just a matter of whether or not they want to, you know, want to disclose it.
Right. Well, I think that's a great idea.
So
we'll all three of us can work on that. We'll, Lisa, that is one of your jobs.
Yes. On top of the 9,000 other ones.
I know. I act like I have it so rough, like talking to people for, you know, a half hour. Meanwhile, she's like doing so much. I know. Yeah. I feel bad adding anything else on.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm going to eat some dinner.
Okay.
And see if maybe any of these foods cause me to have an off number.
Yes, you might have to go on a low FOB map diet. Is that what she said?
Yeah,
Something mono. There's a lot of acronyms in there.
I know. I'm like, what?
Yeah, but yes. Yeah. So yeah. Well, go ahead and say it.
All right. Well, be sure to tune in next time when we show up, sit down, and talk shit. Thanks again for joining us, and be sure to tune in next time when we show up, sit down, and talk shit.
Thanks for hanging out with us at Poop Problems. I hope you enjoyed today's show. Poop Problems Podcast is a listener-supported show. If you like what you heard today and want to make this show even better, please get involved. You can get involved a few ways. If you have a great poop story or a pressing poop question, please leave us a voicemail. We may feature your message on an upcoming show. You can do this by clicking the link in the show notes. Tell your friends about Poop Problems and share this podcast on social media. Listeners can support this podcast through monthly pledges of any amount. Just click on the link in the show notes. Lastly, don't forget to subscribe to Poop Problems Podcast. We don't want you to miss any episodes. Poop Problems is hosted by Heather DiCriscio and Debbie Constable and is produced by Lisa Hugh. Visit us at poopproblemspodcast.com.